I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning and happy Mother's Day to all of our wonderful mothers. I'm Duncan Ferguson. I will be the worship associate today. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. We are pleased to welcome as speakers today UUCS members Judy Saucerman, Kevin Iono, and we welcome back to our pulpit Dr. Danielle Pilgrim, an advocate for justice and systemic change. Dr. Pilgrim currently serves as Director of Public Policy and Communications at Deep Center, and she recently served as Executive Director for Justice Unites Savannah Together. Caitlin McRae will bring our Love at the Center moment. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for May is Awakening Curiosity. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube and on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. Our chalice lighter this morning is Lorraine LaFerrière. She coached me. Lorraine LaFerrière. We kindle this flame with love for mothers. For mothers past, present, and future. We kindle this flame in celebration of community and its generations. We kindle this flame with respect and support for the greater circle of life of which we are all a part. The call to worship this morning is written by Reverend Lisa Day. In 1870, Unitarian Julia Ward Howe issued a call for a Mother's Day of Peace. Almost 100 years later, and more than a lifetime ago for some of you in this room and watching on YouTube, a poster created by Lorraine Schneider with dark black letters and bright flowers against a bright yellow background proclaimed a simple truth. War is not healthy for children and other living things. Both the call for a Mother's Day of Peace and the poster stand somewhere near the middle of a long, long line of such calls and declarations spanning hundreds of years into the past and perhaps hundreds of years into the future. Yet still, we go to war. We gather and worship this morning as mothers, as grandmothers, as parents and grandparents of all genders, as people who do not claim the role of parent, but hold the future of all our children and other living things in sacred duty with the intent, with the prayer, that the span of time ahead, leading finally to lasting peace, shortens with each passing year, each passing day, as we recall ourselves and our leaders to sanity. Come, let us worship together. Please rise in body and or spirit for our opening hymn number 163, for the earth forever turning.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day to everyone, to all the mother figures and everyone who does any form of mothering, which is what our story is about, is a kind of a different kind of mother figure. Now, the name is not written on the cover, but does anybody know this one, Harris?
I can't remember the name, but I do know it.
You know it? Can anybody remember?
Okay,
your mom knows. What's it called?
Mother Bruce.
Mother Bruce. Mother Bruce is one of my favorite Mother's Day stories. Bruce was a bear who lived all by himself. He was a grump. He did not like sunny days. He did not like rain. He did not like cute little animals. Bruce only liked one thing, eggs. He collected them from all over the forest. But Bruce didn't eat eggs raw like other bears. Instead, he cooked them into fancy recipes that he found on the internet. One day, Bruce came across a recipe for hard-boiled goose eggs drizzled with honey salmon sauce. What do you guys think? Yay? Nay?
Yay!
Oh! Middle. Yeah. Uncertain. So he went out to get the ingredients. First, he caught a few salmon. Then he collected honey from a local beehive. He liked to support local businesses. Last, he went to Mrs. Goose's nest to pay her a visit. "Are these eggs free-range organic?" he demanded. And at home, Bruce prepared the eggs for hard boiling. But the fire in his stove fizzled, so he went out to get more wood. When Bruce came back, he was met with an unwelcome surprise. "Mama!" Bruce became the victim of mistaken identity. Bruce wanted hard-boiled eggs, not goslings. He supposed he could settle for buttered goslings on toast. But for some reason, he lost his appetite. Bruce scooped up the little geese and stomped back to their nest. And he says, "I'll have to ask Mrs. Goose about her return policy." Only to find Mrs. Goose had flown south early. Bruce left the goslings there anyway and went back home. But he was followed. Mama? Bruce was very stern and said things like, "Go away," and "I am not your mother," and "I liked you better when you were eggs." Bruce could take it no longer and became extra grumpy with them. What did he do?
Roar.
Yeah. Have your moms ever roared at you?
Ava.
Yeah, I've roared too. Yeah, your mom's in good company. It didn't work. Goslings always follow their mother, even if she is a he and he is a bear. Mama. Bruce was stuck with them. He tried to make the best of it. It was hard work. Look, they don't even like his cooking. I bet at one point you guys were like that too. And look what he ends up doing. Falling asleep. Yeah, I bet your parents have been in that same boat. As the seasons passed, Bruce watched the pesky goslings grow older. They went from annoying baby geese to stubborn teenage geese to boring adult geese. Then, one fall afternoon, he saw other goose families flying south. Finally, he'd be rid of those geese and he could take a long winter nap. Bruce explained migration But they didn't listen. They went and got winter coats instead. Bruce needed the geese to leave, so he got creative. A little slingshot action. Never hurt anybody. Nothing worked. The geese would not leave Bruce. Sigh. So Bruce decided to pack some bags and take his geese into town. They boarded a bus and migrated to Miami. Now every winter, Bruce and his geese head south together. They laze about at the beach in tacky shirts, sipping ice-cold lemonade, while Bruce dreams of new recipes. Recipes that don't hatch.
This congregation is a theologically diverse religious community with membership open to all those who are in accordance with our values and principles. Our congregation is entirely self-governed by democratic process. One of the privileges of our free church tradition is to provide all the financial support for our many ministries from among ourselves. Generosity, therefore, is one of the spiritual values we recognize as central to our personal and institutional well-being. You are now invited to participate in the blessing of giving. Our offerings will now be gratefully received. Thank you for your generosity.
Where is love? Does it fall from skies above? Is it underneath the willow tree? I've been dreaming of. Where is she? Who I close my eyes to see? Will I ever know the sweet hello that's meant for only say where she may hide? Must I travel far and wide till I am beside the someone who I can mean something to? There's nothing to it. There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
Mother's Day Proclamation. And let's read that together. I will read the regular text. The congregation together will read the italicized text. Arise then, women of this day.
Arise, all women who have hearts, that your marriage has been done by your mother or peers.
We shall not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own and says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder
is not about justice. Blood does not bring about dishonor, nor violence in the debate of possession.
As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first. Let them then solemnly take counsel with each other as the means whereby the great human family can live in peace. Please rise in spirit and or body for hymn number 166 in your gray hymnal, Years Are Coming.
Thank you.
As shown in your order of service, we now welcome our speakers, starting with Judy Saucerman. Judy?
I have a special relationship to war, and I'll share that as we go along. I want to point out some numbers, some statistics, because they're huge and kind of shocking. And they are associated with what happens when the warrior dies. So in World War I, we lost 116,626 warriors. 4.7 million men and some women served. They came back with shell shock. Now we call it PTSD. Some of them were disabled, sometimes permanently. Sometimes they then committed suicide. In World War II, 416,800 men and women died. 16 million served, came back with PTSD without a name, no treatment. And those households did not do well. In terms of overall casualties, World War II resulted in 1,076,245 dead and wounded Americans, not to mention the Germans, the French, and everybody else, during the nation's four-year involvement. 3% of the global population died. 8 million German men died. In Korea, 36,500 died. In Vietnam, 58,220 died. 1,500 were missing in action. They came back with PTSD and later found that they had cancer from Agent Orange. In Iraq, 4,500 men and women died. 200,000 were wounded, giving us a total that are 634,995 men and women have died just in the last century. And what happens when the man and the family dies? Now, all of these men, service members, were not, some were not men, some were moms, some were women, sisters. What happens to a family when the head of the family dies, or uncle so-and-so dies, or brother so-and-so dies? You don't recover from it. They don't come back. There is no next. And so we have lots and lots and lots and lots of families that have been torn apart because during World War I, the women who were widowed couldn't vote. They couldn't own property. They rarely had transportation. They couldn't find jobs that would allow them to support their families. So there's that. In World War II, women were better off, but not much. But they were encouraged by the government to go to work, to take the men's jobs, and they did. And we remember Rosie the Riveter as the example of that. Rosie the Riveter left her children somewhere, had to go to work. The government did provide some daycare, but we don't know how well those children were treated. You farm your children out to somebody else, and you're hoping that they don't get hurt or molested or abused or neglected, but you don't know. So through all of this, you have women filling in, dealing with the problems that the men left for them. And there were lots of problems. In this century, as of October 3rd, 2025, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health, 67,075 people have been killed in Gaza, and 169,430 people have been injured, totaling 236,505 Gazans who were killed or injured by planes, mostly, that we supplied. what happened to the moms and the children in Gaza? Many of them were shot trying to get food. In addition, in the United States, the prevalence of military deaths called by self-inflicted injuries, a category that includes all apparent suicide attempts, has increased. These incidents have become the most common cause of death in the military, rising 44% since 1980. So a lot of our soldiers are coming back and killing themselves. And the Army, the Navy, they don't know why. It's just one of those, what happens when you go to war? I have an uncle, my mother's half-brother, who was in the United States Navy during World War II. And I did a lot of research. The family lore was that he was in the Seabees. And his father could make do, fix anything, and I assumed that my uncle was probably a lot like that. But I found out that he was on a Navy ship that went around and repaired other ships that had been blown up, strafed, kamikazed. And so his job, he was a machinist mate, he would go into the other ship and repair it so it could keep going. Well, I just think, you know, brains against the bulwark probably were not so much fun for him. And he came home and in about 3 or 4 years committed suicide. So that's deeply personal to me. This is what happens when you have war. There are reverberations. This man was my favorite uncle. He was great. He was fun. And he was gone. According to the United Nations report on the impact of armed conflict on children, civilians have been increasingly and severely affected by war. Among them, half are children and adolescents younger than 18 years of age. In 1996, UNICEF stated that in the period from 1985 to 1996, 2 million children had been killed in the war. What did their mothers think, feel, do? 4.4 to 5 million had been left disabled or severely wounded. Who had to take care of these children? 12 million children were displaced or made homeless. That affects a child forever. And 1 million lost their parents or were separated from them. And don't even get me started, I'm a clinical social worker, on what happens when you lose your attachment figures. So you wonder why we're in the state we're in. So protracted exposure to adverse events results in dysfunctional coping mechanisms. No stuff. Some of them are anxiety disorders, post-traumatic stress disorders, depression, dissociative disorders, disengagement in the external world, such as depersonalization, derealization, numbing, and catatonia, behavioral disorders, especially aggression, asocial and violent criminal behavior, and alcohol and substance abuse. Okay, so much for the statistics. It's horrible. We don't even think about what happens to the families when these folks go to war. I will tell you, my father joined the Army Air Force back in 1938-9. He was a doctor. He was a surgeon. He was sent to Puerto Rico because Puerto Rico was where we were trying to keep the Germans from coming through with their submarines and blowing up the Panama Canal. So there was a reconnaissance squadron there, and he was assigned to that. And he was like the flight surgeon, although they didn't have flight surgeons then. And my mother went to join him, and I was born in Puerto Rico in September of 1941. Well, in December of 1941, Pearl Harbor started us in the war. The war was already going on, but we were saying, nah, it's not a war. So now we are in the war, and the women and children from Puerto Rico are shipped back to the States. That's another whole piece of work we can talk about sometime. With the German submarines beginning to function on the East Coast. So my mother was quite anxious. She was on deck one night, and there were lights in the sky, and she asked a sailor. This is her story. My mother embroidered the truth a lot. But she asked a sailor, you know, what are the lights about? And he said, well, it's probably one of the other ships in our convoy. And we weren't in a convoy. I found that out. We didn't convoy at the time. But we were going from San Juan, Puerto Rico, to New York City in January of 1942. A little chilly out. Turns out that there was a ship that was sunk, and on the return flight or ship from New York, the skipper picked up 73 people in a lifeboat that had been adrift for 3 days and saved their lives and returned them to Puerto Rico. There had been 3 lifeboats from that ship. 2 didn't make it. Women, there was a 2-year-old child on that ship, on that lifeboat. You wonder what happened to her. So anyway, we were shipped back to the States. My father's in Puerto Rico. In October 1st of 1942, he and 21 other men and 3 women got on a plane to go from Ponce, where I was born, to San Juan. And they hit a mountain and died. 22 people on board. So I lost my father when I was a year old. It's like you don't get another one. It makes a lifelong and profound difference. It's probably responsible for why I focus on trauma in my practice. I know a lot about it. Unfortunately, my mother didn't cope so well. She ended up being alcoholic. My sister thought she was better than everybody else, so we were never close. And there was no balance in the family. Nobody to say, oh, don't do that, honey. That's not a good idea. And I'm not saying this to get any kind of pity for me. I'm saying this is what happens. Be aware. I'm preaching to the choir here. I get it. But I think it's important to hear these personal stories because it's not just somebody died. So that's all I have to offer today, and I really appreciate all of you for listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy. Kevin Yono.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you, Judy, for that heartfelt testimony. The effects and destruction of ecosystems by warfare is something that's not often discussed, and often we don't think about it. So this is a lamentation and a witnessing for war's ecocide. In the 1870s and 80s, the U.S. government, in its war against American Indians of the Great Plains, in order to hasten their surrender and force them onto reservations, encouraged the wholesale slaughter of the American bison. Once numbering in the tens of millions, by the 1890s, less than 100 bison survived in the wild. 3/4 of all mammal and bird species are encountering or have in the recent past armed conflicts within their habitat ranges. Tens of thousands of animals in Southeast Asia and Africa, animals such as antelopes, elephants, and gorillas, have been killed when they stepped on landmines. African elephants have been hunted for meat to feed combatants, and they've been killed for ivory to fund terrorist groups in Mali and the Democratic Republic of Congo. 750,000 Rwandans fled the 1994 civil war to live at the edges of the Virunga National Park, a UNESCO World Heritage Site in present-day Congo. Up to 1,000 tons of wood were stripped from the park every day for the next 2 years, used for fuel and to build shelters. And this wasn't the people's fault. They had to survive. 2 years later, 22 square miles of this park had been stripped bare, and 65 square miles had been seriously compromised. The U.S. military used 72 million liters of rainbow herbicides, including Agent Orange, decimating 7,700 square miles of forest cover in Vietnam, contaminating the soil and water for generations, affecting fish, birds, destroying food production, and consequently, the lives of humans. When no longer needed, 2.2 million gallons of Agent Orange were incinerated on an atoll in the South Pacific. In the last 60 years, 40% of all civil wars have been related to the exploitation of natural resources due to their high value, such as diamonds, timber, and oil, or their scarcity, such as fertile land and water. The testing of atomic weapons has released radioactive materials into the atmosphere, soil, and water, contaminating food chains, causing genetic mutations in plants and animals, and has had far-reaching consequences for ecosystems, especially for marine life in the South Pacific. When retreating from Kuwait in the first Gulf War, Iraq adopted a scorched earth policy in an attempt to disable Kuwait's oil-producing infrastructure. More than 750 oil wells were systematically and comprehensively destroyed. In addition to degrading air quality in the region with the release of toxic chemicals, oil and soot combined with sand and gravel forming a hardened tarcrete over almost 5% of the country's land. While the continued sinking of oil into the sand has had ongoing consequences for Kuwait's already limited groundwater resources. What was perhaps the largest oil spill in history was deliberately caused by the Iraqi military, which dumped up to 1.5 million tons of oil from several tankers in order to foil a potential amphibious landing by the U.S. The oil spill had serious and long-lasting consequences for the ecosystem of the Persian Gulf around Kuwait and Iraq. Among the most conspicuous effects of the Iraqi war was the ruinous damage done to the environment in the south of the country, including Saddam Hussein's deliberate and punitive actions against the marsh Arabs, drying out the unique marshland ecosystem of the Tigris-Euphrates Basin, one of the cradles of civilization, in which they live, and the deforestation of more than 15 million date palms. Ukraine's war with Russia has endangered around 600 species of animals and 750 plant and fungi species, many which are rare and facing potential extinction. Ukraine contains 35% of Europe's biodiversity, and the war is disrupting migration, breeding, and food chains of animals across Ukrainian forest and wetlands. Satellite images show that 80% of Gaza's trees have been lost since the Israeli invasion. Wetlands, sand dunes, coastal waters, and the only significant river, the Wadi Gaza, have all suffered extensively. Destruction of water treatment plants on Gaza's Mediterranean coast have produced plumes of sewage spewing into the sea. When Israel bombed oil facilities in Iran just a few weeks ago, a black rain fell over much of the country. In the first 2 weeks of the U.S.-Israeli-Iranian war, an estimated 5 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions were released. That's the equivalent to a mid-sized nation's annual contribution to the warming planet. Since the beginning of the war on terror, the U.S. military, the largest institutional consumer of fossil fuels in the world, has released 1.2 billion metric tons of greenhouse gases, an amount equal to the annual emissions of twice the number of cars on U.S. roads. If you haven't already, say a prayer for the soul of the world.
Thank you, Kevin. Dr. Danielle Pilgrim.
70 million, 40 million, 30 million, 15 million. These are the low side of estimated numbers of people who have died in the five deadliest wars in human history. 70 million, 40 million, 20 million, 30 million, 15 million. These numbers reflect the deaths of military personnel, but mainly innocent civilians who are often account for most of war-related deaths. Deaths often caused by war-induced epidemics, famines, or genocides. And sadly, the five deadliest wars are only roughly 3% of the wars that have happened throughout human history. Wars that has caused around 570 million deaths. And so to answer the question, what are the effects? The answer is simple. It's a loss of millions and millions and millions of lives. It's not just the loss of military personnel life. It's the loss of millions of innocent civilians, innocent men, women, innocent children, children who will never get the chance to live out their visions and their dreams. But death is not the only effect of war, because for those who miraculously survive the atrocities of war, those who survive have to deal with significant food insecurity, medical shortages, and poverty. But the reality is that war affects the living as much as the dead. Because even after bullets stop flying, civilians face enormous challenges trying to rebuild their neighborhoods, their economies, and lives. And no matter the socioeconomic status of a person had before the war, the rich and the poor struggle to rebuild their lives because trauma persists well after conflict subsides. You know that studies show that 1 in 5 people living in recent war zones have depression, anxiety, PTSD, bipolar disorder, or schizophrenia. And worst of all, trauma-induced mental health problems can even be passed down from generation to generation. Studies show that children of conflict survivors can experience higher rates of PTSD and anxiety disorders. And so, to answer the question, what are the effects of war in our communities? The answer is simple. The effects are it destroys the quality of human life. It harms the current generation and the generations to come. And this is why silence is never a good response to senseless wars. This is why we cannot be silent at the violence of war, because silence desensitizes us to death, trauma, and poverty. Silence desensitizes us to our shared humanity, because silence causes us to ignore the dignity and the worth of our fellow human beings. And the question I would like for us to consider on this Mother's Day is, how many more mothers must mourn the loss of their children to senseless wars before we call for a more humane leadership? How many mothers must bury their infants before we call for a more just and merciful society? How many more mothers must suffer before we advocate for a more peaceful alternative and a more peaceful future? Because as John F. Kennedy once said, Mankind must put an end to war before war puts an end to mankind. Amen.
Thank you, Judy, Kevin, and Danielle, for beautifully articulating the devastating impact of war on our children, on humanity, on the fragile ecosystems of this earth and our fellow species, living species other than humanity, and on our communities and our economies. May this service today serve as a reminder and a motivator, for we hear, and like the butterfly effect, may it, even in some small way, spread wide over this sacred planet and help infuse it with the spirit and values of the Mother's Day of Peace and the truth, war is not healthy for children and other living things. May our service today be one in a million religious and community events, human actions, and heartfelt prayers that lead ultimately to lasting peace upon this earth. May it be so. Please rise in body and or spirit for our closing hymn number 162 in your gray hymnals, Gonna Lay Down My Sword and Shield. Mothers and grandmothers and caretakers and everyone here go forth and have a blessed and uplifting Mother's Day. be true, be well, be loving. We leave this gathered community, but we do not leave our connections, our concerns, our care for each other. Our service to each other, to the world, and to our faith continues. Until we are together again, friends, be strong, be well, be true, be loving.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.